Hi everyone and welcome back to Into the Void. I'm your host Ant and you join me today for episode number 30 of my weekly audio diary in which I share my observations about the world and this strange thing we call life. And of course, being a diary format, I also share reflections about the direction of my own life at this specific time, because it's obviously a time of change for many of us. There's definitely no more head in the sand type scenario for any human being, really, wherever we are on the planet. Anyway, thank you all for tuning in for today's episode. First of all, big apology on my part for my absence last week. Unfortunately, I was laid low for several days with a flu type bug thing. But anyway, that did at least give me the opportunity, as it tends to when we have an illness, short-term illness anyway, an opportunity to recharge and refocus. And what I was, as I was reflecting, as I was laid low and just spending a number of days on the sofa really, wasn't really up to anything else other than just rest and recuperation, some thoughts that came percolating to the surface. It's a big epiphany that I had. And this is this idea of how we reach a certain point in life and we realise that we've come full circle. And it always finds expression, what I'm talking about, in this phrase. I first heard it, I don't know who originally penned it, or authored it, perhaps I should say. I first heard it on a brilliant TV show from the 70s and 80s called Rumpole of the Bailey, back when British TV was pretty damn good, actually. And he said, in my beginning is my ending, and in my ending is my beginning. And that really sums up very succinctly the epiphany that I've had in the last few weeks since I last spoke to you guys. And it's the sort of realization, on the one hand it's an empowering realization, because I realize now that there's nowhere that I need to get to. There's no specific place in the world or even here in the UK that I need to move to, where all the cool people are and whether people are going to actually recognise who and what I'm about. I realise now, finally, after nearly 52 years on this planet, that a lot of what I thought I needed to do in terms of being in certain places, as I was just saying, or mixing with certain types of cool, you know, alternative people, I've spent a lot of time, I should say, pursuing this idea in my head that that's what I needed to do. I needed to get to somewhere in order to discover myself. And I realise now that simply isn't true. Although the good thing when we feel compelled to be in certain places or to try and find certain people is at least it gives us a compulsion to explore. It gives us a motivation, you know, to get out of bed and to pursue life, to grab life. But overall, I would say that in a more positive light, this idea of, you probably heard the expression that we never leave home and that we're always at home, it sort of reminds me of the classic 80s pop tune from Paul Young, a great song, "Wherever I Lay My Hat, That's My Home." And it's that idea of wherever we go, there we are. Of course, one of the main sort of overriding philosophical principles of The Wizard of Oz is this fact that we never, you know, Dorothy never left Kansas. She was always at home. And I've had that, I've always had an awareness of that, you know, like lots of people who do sort of self-work and are interested in the meaning of life and the roots of life and why we do all the crazy things we do and why there's so much silliness in this world. I think we all have that awareness, kind of like on an intellectual level, but it's only since I've been laid low, as I was saying at the beginning of this episode, that it's really dawned on me on a very much a sort of feeling, sensing level, not just a cerebral level, but a like, oh my God, it's quite sobering when you do realise how externally focused I've been for most of my adult life, really, and how I've sought external validation and approval from others, and that's got me into some really difficult situations, of course, as you might understand, because that's not other people's responsibility to do that. That's down to me to approve of myself, to love myself. So some might say this sort of understanding is a long time coming, and if you're a mature adult, hopefully you do gain it by the time you're in your mid-30s and you've established a career and perhaps entered into some sort of marriage or long-term relationships, and you've kind of set your coordinates, where I've never really done that. As I've said in the past, I've been a bit of a loner, I've been a bit of a maverick, and I've never really wanted to sort of commit to putting down roots. But at least now I realize that, you know, there's nothing more that I need to do, or there's nothing more that I need to be. I am whole as I am sat here in my office right now. Apologies, it's a bit echoey in here. Once the weather improves, be able to get back outside and get some nicer, fuller audio for you guys listening. So yeah, it's when the phrase that I coined actually is when the constant seeking ends, then the wisdom finally arises. And it isn't really about what we're doing, it's about our level of beingness, our level of consciousness. And again, just a little cultural reference. One thinks of the pop tune, I think it was Funboy Free, yeah. It ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. And that, to me, as is encapsulated in a lot of songs, not just pop songs, but in a lot of lyrics, the basic kind of truths, human truths, universal life truths, if you will, are encapsulated. And it really is, it ain't what you do, it's the way that you do it. And more, this idea of coming full circle, I realise that now. And as I've been saying, so much of my kind of my meanderings in the world, so many of the things that I thought that I needed, just in terms of achievements, which society expects us to pursue, I realise now that actually they weren't my own desires. And I was motivated by forces outside of myself. Just another kind of example to flesh out what I'm saying today, and this idea of coming full circle. And I recently said on my audio diary that I'd rediscovered my love of music. I think it was last time, and this gave me a kind of pause for thought. And I remember back in the 90s, I was in a kind of domestic situation, living situation, sorry, home, whereby I was actually working for Royal Mail at the time, a postman or a postperson, perhaps I should say, and which meant I was out by sort of 4:30 in the morning. This is during the 90s, and I was back by midday, so they're quite short days, albeit tiring, as you might imagine when you're up that early. But during the day, during the afternoon, after I'd had my sleep, because it's quite a tiring job, as I say, as you can imagine, I had pretty much the house to myself. And at that time, back in the 90s, I really was a bit of a muso. I was really into my music, lots of different genres, predominantly funk and jazz, and at the time acid jazz, which was a kind of very sort of subgenre of jazz, which real jazz aficionados probably would pour scorn on. Anyway, and I just remember, and also there was a few really decent radio stations back then, London-based radio stations that I listened to a lot, and that's how this is sort of pre-internet, before how I found new artists and new genres to listen to. And at the time, I was living in the sort of Greater London area, and so I had the opportunity to get into Central London and other places nearer Central London, all the great music venues like the Royal Festival Hall and other such venues to see live artists. And it was, I remember back then, I was also quite socially isolated as well. And I had in my mind, I sort of fixated on this idea of the experience I had of enjoying the music, of dancing around my little room and really getting into it all. And really, that thing when you discover an artist, a new artist for the first time, and then you slowly get into more and more of their albums, and then perhaps you get the whole back catalogue. And it's a really enlivening, invigorating process when you get into a new artist or a new band, whoever they might be. And I was really enjoying a lot of that back in the 90s, but I always felt that my experience of enjoying the music was slightly diminished because I was just doing it on my own. I was just in my own room listening, and I like a bit of a dance. I like a bit of a boogie as well. And I always thought to myself, oh, how sad, I'm just doing this on my own. But bringing this back to coming full circle, I now realise that that just wasn't the case. That actually, the sort of the profundity of the experience I was having, or the depth or fullness of the experience I was having, was not in reality diminished in any way because I was doing it on my own, and because I wasn't sharing music with friends or acquaintances at that time. And I sort of, from the late 90s onwards, when I went to university as a mature student, part of that was to kind of rediscover this sort of youth that I feel like that I never had, sort of going out, getting drunk and such like, and also just hanging out, relaxing, chillaxing, whatever the phrase is these days. And I realize now that in my quest to do that, I don't know, I don't really know where it was coming from. It was coming from a sense in which, as I was just saying, a sense of lack, and that my experience with music at that time didn't have any kind of deeper meaning, because I was just enjoying it on my own. But as I say, what I've now realized in terms of this epiphany, and in my beginning, in my ending, and in my ending is my beginning, that actually that was the totality of the experience I was having, and that really was very enriching and very soulful and very enjoyable, like it is when we appreciate music. And that's what I mean by coming full circle, is that now, as I rediscover music again, I realize, wow, how I wouldn't say it was a privilege, but I would say it was, kind of a magical experience those years to be into music so much, and to really to look back and think, wow, it's kind of sad that I didn't think that was enough, and I had to somehow go out into the world and share my experiences with other people in terms of music and my enjoyment of music, for it to have some sort of deeper meaning, or some sort of deeper, how should we say, deeper veracity as well. But now I understand, in terms of this idea of coming full circle and my rediscovery of music in the here and now, in recent months, because the way in which I appreciate music is I do it on a very deep level. I'm not one of these people that could be cooking in the kitchen and just has music in the background, or maybe doing some work on a laptop or whatever it might be, because obviously our attentions are drawn to all different places. Typically, whilst listening to music, I'm not that kind of person. Being quite an intense person, I like to be fully engaged with whatever piece of music it is that I'm listening to. So yeah, it's rediscovering my love of music. It's made me realise how I've come I have come full circle, and I guess in a way, I've sort of realized that that I'm enough. And in this moment right now, as I was saying a few minutes ago, whatever I'm doing is enough. I don't need a following. I don't need an audience. I don't need people. I don't need other people to do it with. And just again, just another sort of cultural example of how, I guess this sort of relates to how much we are socially isolated when it comes to enjoying music, perhaps, is in recent years the rise in popularity of YouTube channels where people just, I think they're called reaction videos, not quite sure. Well, they'll just listen to music, normally outside of their typical genre, and you see their reactions, and normally it's two people, and they stop the music at various points, and then they'll talk to one another. And I know this is quite a sort of quite a popular theme or genre online, these music response videos. So I think that's the popularity of that sort of type thing on YouTube and other video platforms is because there is something quite special and unique about how we respond to music. But I think back in the day, before we became sort of so socially atomized, I think perhaps we would have, we would have enjoyed the company of other people, like, as I was saying, like what I was seeking. And now we see people doing it online with their friends or whatever, or their co-hosts if they have a podcast, and see them reacting to the music. And I think it does bring up something quite visceral in us, really. And it's been interesting to see that particular genre, how popular and how popular they remain to this day. Anyway, I just wanted, that was just something I that an epiphany that came to me really during my period of ill health. And something else that I've been reflecting on, just moving on now in terms of, as you know, what I like to regularly return to, my energy update. And this is something that I have spoken to or spoken about, but I'm noticing it more and more. That's why I'm going to repeat it. And that's how I'm noticing that in terms of my attention or focus, or when I concentrate on anything, it might be preparing vegetables for cooking, might be preparing for podcast episode, it might be whatever, it might be just sat reading a book quietly of an evening. What I'm noticing more and more is just how, once I click into what typically we know of as a flow state, which is just a fancy word for saying one is focused or concentrating on a specific task, as I was saying, whatever that might be. But as each day goes by now, I feel that sensation, or the feeling, maybe I could say, ever more, it really is ever more intense, and it almost feels like an alternative reality. And when I'm in that intense state of flow or concentration or focus or attention, it does feel like the world outside doesn't exist anymore. And I do really have this sense or this feeling that this feels real to me, and the outside world and the increasing insanity of it as each day passes is just doesn't feel real at all. It really is. It's a very strange experience. And also at the same time, talking of time, I feel that how I experience time is shifting and morphing almost minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, in that I can get to the end of the day and reflect upon what I've done at various parts during the day. And it's really hard to reflect and say, well, in the morning after I got up, after I had breakfast, I was doing that, or at midday or lunchtime, I was doing that. It all, to me, just feels like it's shifting and morphing into just one continuous moment. And if I sit and reflect, say, on a week before, or 2 weeks before, or a month before, or even a year, it's really hard to distinguish periods of time now, more and more. And this does seem to feed into this idea that a lot of people are talking about. And that's how we're told. And I do believe that when we look at our own lives and when we look at events out there in the exterior, in the external world, sorry, that this reality as we have known it is literally, it really literally is dissolving in front of our eyes. And just another example, I just find that things don't hold or don't stick like they once did. So that's why in the external world we're seeing so much of the corruption exposed, you know, even on a local level and on an international level as well. It's because what once could be hidden is it can no longer be hidden. And it's almost I'm finding in terms of my own life, and when I if I behave in ways that, let's just say, aren't very honourable, I don't mean necessarily criminal, but let's just say I go against my word, or I say I'm going to do something for someone and I don't do it. So we could say perhaps those moments when we don't act with integrity, we don't follow through on what we say we're going to do. I notice there's like an instant kickback. There's an instant reaction, because reality is shifting, reality is dissolving, and we can no longer, I believe anyway, it's just my thoughts or observations, is that we can no longer navigate life in the way that perhaps was feasible in the past. I find that it's very, very difficult now to, as I was saying earlier, sort of to put one's head in the sand, to live in denial of certain things, to, another way of putting that, of course, is to lie to ourselves. And quite often lying to ourselves is, I know for myself, is downplaying our capabilities or downplaying what we could and perhaps should be doing in the world. And furthermore, in regard to this point, sorry, I'm noticing that when I do play small, when I do, when I play safe, perhaps another way I could put it, when I play safe, that things just unravel, and it's almost like my universe is going, "Ant, no, you're not gonna have the easy option anymore." And I don't mean that like in terms of the universe is punishing me, but I mean in a higher sense, it's a really good thing, because we're now in a period where, as you know, many, many people, many commentators and all the rest of it saying that the energies are rising, we can feel it. And that just means, as I said in my New Year episode on my sister's show on Discerning Consciousness podcast, we can no longer do things the way we have always done them before. Or at least, I should say, we can no longer do things like we've done in the past and expect the same result. I think that's just as much true. And I believe, you know, that relates to all of us as individuals, whether you're the CEO of a tech company, whoever or whatever you might be, someone, you know, living in an intentional community in, I don't know, rural Idaho. I don't know why I just picked some random state in the United States, but I think you get my point. It really is. It's impacting all of us because it's an energetic phenomena. It's indiscriminate. It doesn't mean that you have to be of a certain vibration, I believe, for these changes to impact us. Anyway, that's just I just wanted to retouch again something that I've spoken about in terms of my energy update and my concept of time, and also just how playing small, just for me personally anyway, and I believe for many other people, just isn't possible anymore. Anyway, I'm just going to move on now. I do want to mention something in the news section this week. Now, this has been big news here in the UK, of course, and abroad if people are interested in such things, and that's the announcement that King Charles has had a cancer diagnosis. Apparently he had been in hospital for some treatment on an enlarged prostate. Now, straight off the bat, I have to say, I did have a little look online, and of course we got all the usual kind of speculation about why this cancer diagnosis has been announced at this time. And I really have to say, as always, I'm not that interested in all the speculation, because as I always say, we'll never know the truth. I mean, at the end of the day, the guy, I think he's about 75. So, you know, a lot of people do contract cancer. We don't know what stage his cancer is at and all the rest of it. But I'm more interested, as always, if you know anything about me and my content, in terms of patterns, trends, movements of consciousness and shifting archetypal expressions. That's what I'm interested in. Not the specifics of events, because we'll never know the whys and wherefores of what's actually going on. So anyway, my viewpoint, for what it's worth, is from what I have seen, I don't really follow the royal family, although I'm a British citizen. I just am completely disinterested. I always think on the soul level, wow, that's a real tough gig to be born into a bizarre and outdated institution like the British royal family, which really should more properly be known as the Greek / German royal family. But I don't want to get into a history lesson right now. But anyway, from what I've observed, we'll just leave it at that. From what I have observed is, I don't think that, even saying King Charles sounds weird. I always think of the dog, Charles Spaniel of cooking. My viewpoint is, I don't believe that he really has the kind of personality or the characteristics to be a king, in the whatever you say about the Queen. And I know with all of these royal figures, they have a public face and they have a private face, like all of us. The public face was of the Queen being this loving, generous woman, and she gave, you know, good service to this country and to the crown colonies, I'll say, rather than the Commonwealth, use the proper phrase. And she always seemed to be diligent, she always seemed to be hardworking, she always seemed to be loyal to her subjects, which is a bit of a strange phrase, but she seemed to be born for the role. Now, my perspective is, with Charles, I don't believe that is the case. I just think we've already seen he's shown his annoyances when a pen was leaking, and he got very upset and annoyed with one of his courtiers, or one of his staff, I'm not sure what the phrase is, because the pen was leaking. And there's also footage of him on Coronation Day, not Coronation Chicken, Coronation Day, back summer 2022, I'm not sure, no, summer 23, gosh, back to getting all the time messed up, yeah, summer 2023, that's right. There's footage of him all getting pissed off and annoyed because he's getting delayed in the carriage. Now, that might have been doctored, it might have been edited, but the point I want to make is that I don't think Charles will be able to be the selfless king. I don't think he's going to be like the Queen. So I think part of this announcement, whether it's real or not, whether he has cancer or not, is preparing the general public, the British people, for the movement towards Prince William becoming the king. I don't think Charles, he doesn't have that sort of golden touch. He doesn't appear to, anyway, as I say, it's just my opinion. He's definitely comes across as very stuffy, very outdated, and I think he would just really quite like to sod off with Camilla and not have to really deal with the public. That's my perspective. So I think this is more, I think the whole cancer thing, you know, if he has got it, I wish him well. You know, I hope he makes a full recovery. I don't really think it's necessarily, I know certain people online are saying this is about getting the general public, you know, more used to cancer, you know, being more common, because we've had these cases of turbo cancer apparently since the jab was rolled out, which, yeah, may well be linked to the jab. I think it's just as much about the fact that the NHS is struggling because so much cancer treatment, was cancelled during lockdown. So that obviously has a roll-on effect, obviously, in terms of increased cancer rates generally. And I just also think this links to what I was talking about before, how we're in this new era that perhaps, you know, perhaps 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, Charles will be able to stay on the throne for 10 years, even though he's really not interested in pressing the flesh of the public, so to speak, shaking hands. It's not his natural thing. He's probably very much like Prince Philip, very much like his dad, you know, an old curmudgeonly git. But as I say, and say a generation ago, he would probably be able to bear it and people wouldn't really see it in his body language that he doesn't want to be king. But we're in a new era now and the truth will out. And I think that's why we're seeing, why we've had this announcement. It's just getting the general public used to the idea of him not being king. I don't think he'll be king when he's 80 years old. I suspect it will be King William within the next two to three years, and that's sort of how I view the situation and this latest announcement in a sort of very practical way, really. I don't see any broader, I don't know, conspiracy or something. Some people are saying he's already dead. I don't know, they're citing the fact that he's got these sausage fingers and he's looked unwell, and I don't like to engage in speculation like that. But I'll just finish this point by saying, yeah, I would be very shocked if he was still on the throne, bizarre phrase, on the throne in 2 to 3 years' time, and yeah, he would have moved on and moved out of the public limelight, shall we say. So in the last, in the final section of today's Into the Void, I want to talk about something that's sort of always been an issue, always been close to my heart. And that is, what is the difference? Let's use an arbitrary phrase here. Forgive me. Sometimes they're useful. So what is the difference between what is commonly called the normie? So someone who follows a lot of mainstream narratives, doesn't really have time to think beyond what the BBC News tells them here in the UK. Choose your own network, whatever country you're listening from. And really just doesn't delve into the deeper roots or meaning of life, and is quite happy to just go along to get along, happily operates within what I would describe as consensus reality, and doesn't really want to look at their own pain, doesn't really want to look at their own trauma, doesn't really want to own any of that, and really sort of lives in a sort of very much a victim blame consciousness. So what is the difference between the normie and the free-thinking, self-reliant human? Kind of someone who does actually want to look at the roots of life and is keen to look at how they act in the world, how they think, how they feel, and how that impacts the people around them, and also, of course, how much perhaps they're running away from their own fears, and how much they're playing small. So that's just a little juxtaposition between the normie on the one hand and the spiritual, if I can say that, free thinking human who is also aware of certain universal truths, certain cosmic truths, has along the way in life had at least one or two dark nights of the souls, and had many epiphanies, and has at least a take or a little bit of a handle on the deeper roots of life. So from my own perspective, I would say the principal difference is that the normie is generally, and again, these are, you know, gross generalizations, so forgive me, but generally the normie exists in their day-to-day life being 100% externally focused. So, as we saw during COVID, which was, you know, the greatest teaching or the greatest lesson we'll ever see as to how society operates, and I'll be grateful that I've lived for it on that level. But it is this idea of no real inner dialogue. And what I mean by an inner dialogue is just a pause for reflection in terms of how we behave in the world, how we act in the world, and realizing that we can't just constantly divide the world into the good people and the bad or the evil people, because as we know, each of us has at least an aspect or a fragment of shadow within us, which is then collectively given expression out there in the material or the physical world. But I would say generally, from normies that I know, forgive me, I know it's a less than flattering phrase, but it will do for the purposes of this conversation. I will say that most normies that I know, most mainstream people who have mainstream thinking, I do think there is this complete lack of an inner dialogue. Not that I can get into their head, of course, but all I can deduce is the way in which they speak or converse to me, and they just live in this very binary world of the good people and the bad and the evil. And of course, they're always, you know, they're always good. They wouldn't have darkness or evil inside of them. So why is this an issue? Why is it such a narrow perspective? And I think it's primarily, it sort of relates to a lot of people who, even if they might be religious, they don't have much of a comprehension of life really beyond the physical realm. So they have a very sort of narrow view. And that means that they essentially remain externally focused. I mean, even a lot of, you know, religious people, be they Muslims, be they Jews, be they Christians, whatever faith they might be from, they tend to see the world in a very kind of typical way, and they won't tend to see the way in which their own thoughts and actions impact the external world. And the reason why I'm talking about this today, this idea of the normie having no inner dialogue and being completely externally focused, why does it matter? Why does it matter? The reason why it matters is because, as we know, we're going through this period of immense change on the planet, and people are already saying this year, 2024, is a pivotal year, and we're going to see extraordinary things happening out there on the stage of life, on the platform of life, be it in terms of the political world or economics or finance or culture or whatever it might be. We're going to see some things that we never thought would happen. Now, if you're a normie, you're just going to look at those events in terms of, you know, good versus evil, in terms of people who are doing things they shouldn't do versus people who are trying to change that, and versus people, you know, who are claiming to be honourable and good people who are trying to change the conditions in the physical world. And why it matters is it's a very limited perspective. And going forward, as we move beyond 2024 into 2025, and things, as I'm sure they will, get crazier and crazier and crazier, I think there is a danger that people will mirror that craziness, the normies, in their own consciousness, because they don't have this broader perspective in terms of, you know, owning their own consciousness and what, as I was saying, what impact they do have and what impact they can have on upon the world, and not being able to see this sort of bigger picture in terms of the transition of humanity into a more elevated state of consciousness. And it is said where we'll be living in greater harmony, because we will be living in terms of harmonization and cooperation between people rather than competition. That is what it's said that we are moving towards. Now, if people don't have an understanding of that, there is a danger that they'll just go down with a ship and they'll just become angry and confused, and they won't, because they won't have a reference point for all the craziness, or they'll just want to withdraw from life because they don't understand what's going on, because it's a lot of what's going on makes no sense. They think to themselves, well, I wouldn't behave in those sort of grossly immoral ways. I wouldn't behave in those sort of warlike criminal ways. And I mean, even for the likes of us, dare I say it, who do have a little bit more of an inside track as to what's going on the level of energies, on the level of consciousness, it's still goddamn hard, isn't it, to navigate life. So imagine just being a normie. Imagine being stuck in blame victim mentality or blame victim consciousness. You can imagine it's going to be really, really tough to navigate these coming years, and there will be this tendency to grab on to a lot of the narratives that will be coming out of the mainstream and the mainstream news, which who will be telling you know, the normies, these are the good people, these are the bad people, these are the people, you know, we should be following, and these are the people we should be ignoring because they're bad for humanity. And I just want to finish by saying that obviously we know human consciousness has been held in an artificially low bandwidth for so long now. Some might say it's the matrix, some might say it's the fake reality. And yes, thank you, World Economic Forum, we are indeed moving into a new reality, in inverted commas, just not the one that you think, but the one that us more conscious, evolved human beings are moving into. And this old, very static consciousness built on artificial control and built on artificial hierarchies, it can't be sustained, and it's just breaking apart. And that's why we're seeing right now. So just at a time when we really do need to be more internally focused and have some sense of an inner dialogue, unfortunately, you know, many, many normies will be looking outside of themselves just at a time when they do need to be developing more of an inner dialogue in order to navigate these increasingly strange times as we move forward. But that's all part of the weird and wonderful aspect of what it means to be a human being. There is always the potential for change. There is always the potential for an awakening. And we're all awakening over a period of time. It isn't one moment. And just lastly, I don't subscribe to these ideas that have been put out there by various people, that those people who took the jibby jab, the COVID jab, the fake vaccine, that now their consciousness is locked and their soul is enslaved, and it means that they, you know, that on a energetic level, they won't be able to, their energies won't be able to be elevated, which means they won't be able to access higher levels of consciousness. I don't believe that to be true at all. I think that's a lot of hocus pocus nonsense being put out by people who are also putting out this ridiculous idea of shedding that there's an aspect of the fake vaccine that meant it was would be able to transit or move towards people who had chosen made their own medical choices, if I can put it like that. I think that was another story put out there, probably by the bad people, shall we say, if I can say that, and then taken forward by these irresponsible truthers in the alternative movement, and again, which is just designed to, again, ironically enough, keep us in a low level of consciousness in a state of fear. Anyway, I think I round things up here. Just lastly, where are we? We're Monday today, aren't we? So this coming week, I will definitely be uploading. I've got a new episode ready now on my sister show, Discerning Consciousness podcast, all about energy harvesting, which is so important right now. You probably heard it described as louche or louche energy. So that will be out before the weekend, before the next episode of Into the Void. So please do check back. Hopefully that will be of interest to you. So thank you all for tuning in. Apologies again for my week's absence, for my period of illness. And thank you so much for all your support. And I'll speak to you all again very soon. Bye-bye for now.